call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Council President Boothen-Grundahar?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And if you would join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. All right, first thing we need is a consideration to amend the agenda.
I move we amend the agenda to add item 7 under business, consideration to approve resolution number, are you guys getting that feedback?
No, it sounds good on this end.
Yeah.
Okay, good, I'll just keep going. Consideration to approve resolution number R24-2020. Consenting to the extension of Mayor Joe Sears' declaration of emergency dated March 17, 2020, concerning the novel coronavirus known as COVID-19.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to make that amendment. The city clerk was notified of this request as of today. We did make a declaration, so we need to get that on the agenda in order for council to confirm that. So. If there's no further discussion on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. Next item is the consent agenda.
If nobody has anything, I move we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Council President Boothen-Grundahar?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Community reports and requests of follow-up February 18, 2020. And tabled March 3rd, 2020, budget expenses and revenue breakdown for discussion and direction on potential CUNA ICA rodeo, city ad hoc committee, and support. Chris Ingalls and Matt Askew. Do you want Matt to come up?
Matt, you want to start or you want me to start? Or? Okay. Mayor and Council, thank you. In your packet, what was provided to you was a proposed rodeo expense and revenue. Just briefly to review it, the expenses are based on three estimates that Matt procured and also fixed costs. Water truck and arena are already been secured for donation if this was to move forward. The potential of additional costs could be $750 for busing, depending on the location, $250 for mailing to neighbors. Again, depends on location if it might seem to disrupt neighbors. Revenue secured or anticipated would be $1,800 for tickets, 3 days at $600, $900 adults, the price at $15, and then you just estimate the children's price at $5. It's nobody is turned away, though. $7,500 in beer sales based on distributor estimates, $5,000 large event sponsor that's already secured, $1,500 for food vendors, and $250 for boutique vendors. That brings secured or anticipated revenue of $32,250. Revenue, addition to that, probable based on the similar rodeos, are 6 spots for bucking chute sponsors, 10 spots for event sponsors, and then a 50-50 raffle over 3 days. That adds an additional potential revenue or probable revenue of $11,750. The potential shortfall based on those numbers of expenses and revenue is $5,200. Potential options for additional revenue are in-kind for hay, equipment used for ground prep, rehab, enhanced large event sponsors, and expanded seating. With that said, I stand for questions or offer the mic to Matt for any additional information. Council Member Boobin, or Council President Boobin Vonderhaar has a question.
Okay.
Given the current uncertainty with the pandemic, if we were to go ahead with this, I guess, at what point would money need to go forward? At what point would any of it be refundable if the event ended up being canceled?
This is Chris Engel, City Clerk, for the record. So we do have some other events that are pending, and we would address the rodeo as we have everything else, and that is that we would probably do a contract with those bringing in facilities, but I believe that due to the fact of the situation that we have a pandemic, I think that we have to have in that contract that there is a cancellation clause with no harm. Otherwise, there's nothing else we can do because it's possible that it'll have to be canceled just based on not being able to have that many people together in a gathering.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further for Chris? Okay, Matt. Yeah, go ahead.
Realistic as we could with the numbers, just in projections. I put on several rodeos a year.
Matt, could you turn the mic on? I apologize.
There we go. Just like I said, I mean, trying to be as realistic as we can. I put on several rodeos a year. I have a very good grasp of those numbers. So just to reiterate what she said, absolutely, that's pretty much where it stands.
Okay. Very good. Questions for Matt?
Nope.
Did you bring a horse we can look at?
Well, I didn't, but I can make a phone call and get it right here. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Chris, what is it that we would actually need in the way of a motion to proceed here?
Bill can step in if he needs to, but I think what we would be asking if you want to support this would be to authorize staff to proceed with bringing forth the resolution to establish an ad hoc rodeo committee under the city with the anticipation of city support as we move forward to seed the potential rodeo if large gatherings are allowed at the time, which would occur during CUNA days.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
What would be the latest date that we could decide to take action on moving forward with planning this, if that's what we wanted to do? The thing that I'm worried about is having people expend a bunch of time and effort on something that might ultimately get canceled. And so I'm wondering if it would be possible to kick the can down the road a little bit before we have to definitively say yay or nay.
I'm going to defer to Matt. He's coming to the mic.
Yeah, Bill, go ahead.
Bill Gigray, city attorney. I think that Chris's recommendation to pursue and proceed with the ad hoc committee would be proper at this stage, and I think that's really consistent with what we talked about when this was first brought up. The idea of that committee would be to put this all together. In my opinion, it wouldn't be a waste of time for the committee to be convened and start putting this together, because even if they didn't run the rodeo this year, I got the sense that the proposal is this would be something that would be an annual event and that it would continue. And if they did put things together and it I think this would help identify who all's going to support this rodeo, what the expenses are going to be, will there be any city support of that, which would, I think, dovetail well in your budget process for the next fiscal year. So, I mean, I think it's up to the proponents of the rodeo as to whether they would want to start now with this in the offing, but in my mind, that committee could be formed, put together, a lot of groundwork done, and even if they weren't able to have the rodeo because of crowd issues, a lot of groundwork would be already started for the following year.
I guess that prompts one more question for me. I had been under the impression that there was a location already picked for this, but I guess it does stay in here. It depends on location of rodeo. We don't have a spot picked yet?
Chris Ingles for the record. No, a spot has not been determined definitely yet. Part of it was we wanted to see if council wanted to move forward and then make some additional calls. We, Bobby and Lisa have made a couple calls already, but just kind of waiting to see direction from council to make further calls.
Am I incorrect then in the assumption that, for example, ground prep and rehab could vary wildly based on what location is used?
Matt, I'll defer to you.
Council President, could you repeat that?
My assumption, tell me if this is incorrect. My assumption is that, for example, the cost associated with ground prep and rehab, that might vary wildly based on what location is used.
In a sense, yes. Bobby had showed me on Google Earth, and I had drove by some of the proposed locations. For the most part, ground prep would be fairly consistent. There is one place that has quite a bit of rock, which where CUNA is, inherently there's some lava rock. We would have to bring in some dirt, so that would increase the cost, but like I said, the other couple places that Bobby and I talked about would fit perfect as far as costs. Those costs are included into what Chris was speaking of on the budget. And then, Council President, can I just touch on your comment about kicking the can down the road? I do agree with Bill on the getting this committee started and contractors, everybody that's involved need to know as soon as they can, just because if we're not going to pursue that weekend, then they can pursue other locations throughout the Northwest, as well as the facility, as well as announcers. There's several acts that go along with the rodeo that serve in contract. So the sooner that we can let them know, the easier it is for us to move forward.
Okay. Further questions? Yes, Mr. Cardoza.
Mr. Mayor, any shortage would be made up by the city then? Any shortfall?
Correct.
There's going to be expenses incurred, I'm sure, even if we don't hold the rodeo. If 2 months from now we have to suspend it again, do you have any idea what the cost might be? How soon do you have to have tickets and riders and advertising?
Yes. So as far as that goes, what the cost to the committee or the ad hoc committee would be is a $30 application fee to the Idaho Cowboys Association. Other than that, all the costs and the hard costs are right up essentially rodeo time. The advertising, the ICA works hand in hand with a couple radio stations. They do a lot of publications and stuff for that. Other than that, like the flyers that Carrie with the chamber would be putting out for CUNA days, we would just have our little excerpt on her flyers, everything else. Other than that, the hard cost to the contractor, he doesn't get paid till after the rodeo. The announcer, judges, timers, everything that is affiliated with the rodeo, same with the arena, the portable arena we would be using, it would be paid at time of rodeo. So essentially, the only cost that the ad hoc committee would be out, clear up until about a month prior to the rodeo, would be that $30.
Okay. Does the association provide insurance for this, or so, how does the insurance work?
So to an extent, so yes, as we spoke at the last meeting, it would fall, the reason that we are coming to the city to put on a city-run rodeo is so that you guys, we fall under your umbrella. The association has some insurance, but we have specialty event insurance. It is a help to the committee, but it is not a full coverage to the rodeo itself. So, I mean, I think you touched on it, Bill, at the last meeting about how the insurance and that would work. As far as anything else, the association is just the sanctioning body. We are going to provide guaranteed contestants, cover all the bad checks, anything of that instance.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Further questions? Yes, Mr. Gigray.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I would think the only action that I believe you're being asked to do this evening is to authorize that the clerk and anyone else, maybe Bobby with Parks and Rec, proceed with a proposal to form the ad hoc committee so that you can pursue this, which you would approve, because we would have a written document and resolution approving this committee. And then if they have specific requests for authorization, that's going to have to come back to the council for you to authorize. Because at this point, I don't know that you've authorized anything other than this study and the budget request, budget information, which has been presented to you this evening.
That would be my understanding, yes, is that we just need a motion to authorize staff to proceed and set up the ad hoc committee. And is there any further discussion from council?
Well, I don't know if it's more appropriate to bring this up now or to let planning get further first. I guess maybe bringing it up now might be more beneficial. I have concerns about the costs and how much the city could be funding. Based on these estimates, it looks like the cost of the city is expected to be at least 52. But with the additional potential costs and then the fact that over almost $12,000 of revenue is just probable and not a for sure, it looks like, you know, we're getting close to $18,000 that the city might end up having to come out of pocket. And I just have some angst about spending $18,000 for something that only 1,800 people get to go to. At the end of the day, we could be spending $1,000 per person, or $100 per person, rather, for folks to go. And when you think about the whole population of Cuna, it's not really an event that even, you know, a third of our citizens could attend, based on capacity and that sort of thing. So I just have some angst about the cost and if it makes sense to spend this much money on this type of thing.
Council President, so we will not turn away anybody that comes. I do believe that the demographic here in Cuna would definitely go to the rodeo. That proposed budget is based on 600 seats. We can get bleachers that encompass the whole entire arena that everybody could have a seat. My goal is this first year to come in and as Bill was saying, make this an annual event. I do know that during CUNA days, the people that the rodeo would be pulling to your community typically wouldn't be coming for CUNA days. That's why we're obviously involving Kerry with the chamber. We're trying to balance out start times so that they can, while they come for this rodeo, they can also go to the concerts, the fireworks, and the other things that are going on. Not that we would turn away people from this community to come. There's going to be lots of standing room. There's going to be different options. This is just the preliminary, like I said, the 600 seats was just part of that arena package.
That's also my understanding that all of your estimates here are very conservative, so we're hopeful that that would be actually worst-case scenario on most of these. Is that correct?
Yes, Mayor. And then as well as I have a $5,000 title sponsor for the event. I have not went out and procured any other sponsorship. I do have other people that obviously know that I've been working towards this. They're very interested in coming on board and that. I'm not going to sell sponsorship until I know we're going to have an event. But yes, that's exactly correct.
Okay. For me, in my opinion, I think the best thing to do is go ahead and let them get this ad hoc committee set up and let them explore some more avenues and see if we can move forward with this before we certainly aren't committing to any dollar at this point. So I think if we let this committee set up and come back, give us a report of what they come up with, and hopefully that estimate can change into something a little more hard and steady. That's my opinion, though. Other thoughts from council?
I think if we proceed with that, that's good on my half.
I think Bill's correct. We're not looking to allocate funds at this time. We're just looking for the ad hoc committee. So, yes, let's proceed.
Mayor, if I can answer a question. Would Mayor and Council want us to have the ad hoc committee maybe look at expanding seating to increase potential ticket revenue, or just continue to work forward with the anticipated 600 seating and then no refusal of entry?
I think the ad hoc committee, it would be incumbent on them to see what they can do to make this as big of an event as possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We would need a motion to proceed with the ad hoc committee, if that's the wish of the council.
Mayor, I move we authorize staff to proceed with the appointment of an ad hoc committee and support for the potential CUNA ICA rodeo.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
And that motion carries. Thank you very much. Item 6A, public hearing and consideration to approve 19-03-AN annexation and 19-02-S preliminary plat. Wendy.
Good evening, Mayor and members of council. For the record, Wendy Howell, CUNA Planning and Zoning Director, P.O. Box 13, CUNA, Idaho. The applicant is requesting to annex approximately 7.67 acres into city limits with a R6 medium density residential zoning classification. They are wanting to divide this parcel into 31 buildable lots and 5 common lots with a net density of 5.092. The future land use identifies the parcels as medium density residential and light density residential. Following review, staff has determined that the annexation preliminary plat requests are within compliance of the CUNA City Code and Idaho State Code. If the council were to approve the annexation and preliminary plat request, staff would recommend that the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in Section J of the staff memo, as well as any other additional conditions. Additionally, in your packet, I have included the meeting minutes from the public hearings with the Planning and Zoning Commission, as well as letters from the public that we have received for this hearing. With that, I will stand for questions.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Howell?
Mr. Gigray, yes.
Yes, Mr. Gigray.
A question I have is this seeking an annexation without a zoning designation? I don't know what the zone is.
R6.
I'm just looking at the agenda, is all.
Oh, yeah. So it says 7.6 acres into the Cuna city limits with an R6 medium density residential zone.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have the applicant? Oh, okay. If you would just state your name and address for the record.
I'm good.
Okay. Our address is 1602 West A Street, ACIO.
And I'm sorry, what was your last name?
McDaniel.
McDaniel. Okay.
Can you speak closer to the mic? I can't hear at all.
All right, that should be better.
That better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Should
All right,
start
thank
over?
You. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I think that Wendy pretty much covered the general aspects of the plat. I would point out that the common area, or the usable common space, is it's centrally located, and it's a walkway fully landscaped with grass, trees, benches, and grills to be used by the community. It runs across the subdivision from South Ash to the future development street, South Cassandra Place, and up to the planned west recessway extension. Another thing to point out is to assist with connectivity and flow of traffic, our plan includes extending west recessway and South Cassandra Place through the subdivision. South Cassandra Place will connect to West Sunbeam, a mid-mile collector street, eventually. And I'll stand for some questions, if you have any.
Okay. Questions for the applicant? We've got to think hard first. Nothing right now?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll go into the public hearing and then we'll come back for.
Okay. Thank you.
More. Thank you. All right. This is a public hearing, and I have one person that has signed up to testify. Was there anybody else who wished to testify on this matter who didn't get a chance to sign in yet? Okay. Cindy Giesen.
Greetings, Mayor, President, and City Council members. My name is Cindy Giesen. I live at 1363 South Ash Avenue. Note that I submitted a letter in time for the packet with two requests. I have three more important issues that I want to present to you. The first issue is that the missing from the package are the school district, sanitation department, and fire department exhibits, which I'm used to seeing, which seem to be very necessary. Additionally, I don't see an update ACHD analysis since a new second plat was presented in the January 14th meeting. This is a requirement as a condition from ACHD. So the second issue is it was difficult to get any answers concerning the houses that were going to be in this subdivision. I felt that if I knew who was running the show, we could get better answers. In my search, I found that there's no ownership information or quick claim deed included in the southern 3-acre R4 parcel. The northern parcel does have the deed. It appears there are two separate LLCs own the parcels. However, our package identifies Don Vesley as the owner of the 7.67 acres. In other documents given to planning and zoning, it states Mr. Vesley's plans for this site are the property and owner intends to build on some of the lots. Others may be sold or selected depending on availability. So now it appears that there are several owners and several developers. This subdivision does not seem to be your typical subdivision project. Ideally, we deal with one developer, one schedule, one builder for an entire subdivision. Managing this development will be very difficult. Issue 3, during the first subdivision hearing in September, it was clear that a new plot was required. There was much emphasis on providing R4 zoning. This would solve some of the problems. After much discussion, the commissioners voted to table the project and requested a new plot. The new plot was presented at the January 14th hearing. R6 zoning was still the only product on that, with only a reduction of 2 homes. I'm going to rush to the most important things. In this document, and unnoticed to everybody, was an X for townhouses. They had included the townhouse dwellings in addition to the single family dwellings. I feel that if the commissioners, and we have recognized that at the meeting, there would have been opposition and the project would have been denied. We are asking that this project be denied.
Go ahead. Is that all you need?
I had more. And all my friends.
If you can make it quick, you can do it.
Okay. We're asking for R4 zoning, and the reasons for that is it would cause maybe a 20% reduction of trip-ins onto South Ash Avenue, which is a local street and is not designed. It's not even designed to be a corridor to Avalon, which is a very dangerous artery. And I guess that's really the most important thing. We're told that there aren't buyers for these kind of, large lots, but we feel that there are many buyers and that there are way too many townhomes and large houses on small lots. And so I think people would love these. The CC&Rs would be less complicated, if at all, And I think that this would be the right thing to do for our neighborhood, which is all R4 and acreage from that point, that lot line down.
Okay.
So thank you for
questions for Ms. Giesen. No. So did I understand you then you're opposed to having a subdivision where builders can come in and buy lots and build houses custom for people? You want to have all one builder? Is that what you're...
Well, a big complaint, and you can read it in the minutes, is that the people who have attended the past 2 meetings have a big issue with what are you going to build there, And they said nice single-family houses, and we couldn't get any more out of them. They're worried about their property values. There's R4 on every side of it, and it's way too much. It's got a cul-de-sac that has 7 homes on it, which was a big concern. That's why we need the fire department and all them to take a better look at it, because on the second plat, they changed the layouts enough that somebody should be looking at this especially.
So R4 is your biggest concern,
R6
a builder and ask for a custom home. Because right now, most of the builders, they're not doing custom homes. You get 5 or 6 layouts, that's it. That's what you can buy from them.
I think that's
if you have multiple builders, then they can come in and they can ask for a custom home built the way they want it.
It's a nice idea, but also everybody's concerned about continuity. You could see the commissioners are wondering, how can you write a CCR if you have an acre and a half property next to a 0.1 acre property next to a 0.25 acre property, and okay. Now they've introduced townhomes, which is ridiculous, you know, into that area.
Okay.
And so it's just a big mess. And right. R4 would solve a lot of our traffic problems and, you know, the design problems that still seem to exist and, you know.
Okay. All right. That answered my question. All Thank right. you. Was anybody else have any questions for Ms. Giesen?
No.
I just urge you to read all okay. the minutes because there's a lot in there about opposition.
All right. Very good. Thank you. And again, that was the only person I had to sign up to testify in this case. Was there anybody else who wished to that didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay, seeing none. Questions from counsel at this point? Are you ready for a rebuttal?
I have a question, Mayor.
Okay.
On page 80 of 117, is that the final plat that they brought? The last one, I guess.
Is that on page 80?
80 of 117.
Looks like that's actually the
preliminary.
Yes.
What? Is that the final rendition of
yeah,
what?
That's the preliminary plat.
Okay. That's it. Okay. Is the purple on there the public area? Common area.
Yes.
And then the yellow is also common area on the outlying east and west, south and west. Okay.
I have a question. Bob, that I can ask now or after rebuttal?
Yes, whichever you want. Go ahead, President.
Okay. I was just wondering what our sewer capacity is for south of the tracks. Apologies if that was in the packet and I just missed it. I didn't see it, but I could
didn't
be
see it either.
Council President, this original plat was already factored into our demand on the system. So the numbers at the previous zoning, the R6 zone, were already calculated in, and for lack of better words, a placeholder was already in place. So these were already EDUs that counted against our capacities. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. All right, I guess we are ready for rebuttal anytime you would like to come back up. And
I understand the issue with traffic is a problem in CUNA as well as throughout the Treasure Valley. It's we're all going through growing pains. Per the conversation that we had at the planning and zoning hearing, the commissioners were aware of the lack of ACHD taking action on the roads before the development takes place. And so that's pretty much how they operate. The development has to go in first. And as far as the house is going in, the developer has developed a subdivision in Star, and I hope that you have one of the documents that refers to Sailing Hawk subdivision. So just because these aren't McMansions doesn't mean that they're cheaply made houses. And some of the features that are listed here, I think, will give you an idea of the type of homes that Mr. Vesey plans on building. I can point out a few of them. He's planning on having quartz or granite countertops in the kitchen as well as baths. And he's having Huntwood level one oak or level two Euro beach cabinets. The padding on the floor for the carpets is 6-pound padding. A satin nickel hardware on the doors, lighting, plumbing, and fixtures. So these aren't shabby houses that he's planning on putting in. There will be a variety of houses just based on the variety of lot sizes there, which actually goes along with the comprehensive plan that CUNA has with providing a variety of houses for the type of population that seems to be growing here. So in general, we are looking at these homes as homes that people will stay in. We're not looking at them as places that people will quickly turn over, you know, as soon as they have enough money to move elsewhere.
May I ask what? Why you would think that you mean you're saying people wouldn't buy these to rent? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I'm not saying that they wouldn't buy them to rent. I think that people are looking for places that aren't as large. There's a trend, and that was part of the discussion that we had at the planning and zoning meeting, is that people aren't looking for these huge lots to maintain. There are younger people who are looking for more manageable lots, as well as retired people. And so people are buying these properties to stay in. They're not looking at them as property to quickly turn over.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Or?
No.
Okay. Did you have anything further you wanted to
No, I think that's it. There?
Okay. All right, thank you. So I have a question for Bob, I guess. I noticed in a couple of these letters they're talking about pressurized irrigation and issues over there and low pressure and that type of thing. Is that a common issue for that general area?
Mayor and Council, not necessarily. This is close to an area that has a gravity ditch that we've had some history of that you're probably familiar with.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. With this project, I mean, we haven't seen the design documents yet, but generally when we get the engineered structural drawings in, if you will, if we have a low pressure area or other issues, we address that at the time the drawings come in. We'll make them create a loop or upsize a line or whatever we have to, whatever that particular situation entails to eliminate a problem. But I have not received many, if any, complaints about low pressure in that area.
Okay.
Mayor?
Yes.
Could I address Bob on a question I have?
Sure.
Bob, is this going through the 10-mile lift station?
Mayor and Councilman Cardoza, yes, it is.
I thought we were pretty much at capacity on that 10 mile?
Yes, we're in the middle of a study on that right now to see what the true capacity is in that lift station. These EDUs are already accounted in that capacity, if you will, so they're already factored in. Basically, there's a drainage basin that is a snapshot of that drainage basin, and all those properties in that basin are accounted for. This is these EDUs already are part of the calculation to determine the current volume.
Capacity at 10 mile.
Yes.
Can 10 mile accept any more capacity in development, or are we pushing the maximum of that pump over there?
Mayor and Council, Councilman Cardoza, if we were to get a 40-acre or an 80-acre subdivision coming in front of us at this time, we would recommend that it not get approved based on that quantity of EDUs until we complete the research and study we're currently doing, which will ultimately determine a fix, whether that's upgrading the pumps, upgrading the wet well size. We know that south of town we have a bottleneck where the two lines come together. If it's as simple as separating the two lines, the study we're in right now, which we're pretty close to knowing what's going on, will determine that for the future. If you recall, this last summer we fired up the old 10-inch line that ran up 10 mile that was abandoned years ago, and that's been working really well. What we're doing right now, we have another project that's out to bid right now that helps alleviate more capacity at 10 mile. So we are, you know, moving forward as quickly as possible to find remedies to that problem. So to answer your question, if it was a large-scale development or a large-scale property, at this time we would have a different opinion on that. Where this property is already, those EDUs are already allocated against the treatment or the lift station, it's not the same issue.
Crago out there has already broke ground. Are they included in 10 mile also down on Kuna Road?
Who was that? I'm sorry.
Crago's property, Joe Crago's.
Yes, some of those, yes and no. Some of those EDUs are actually going to end up going north. And the ones that are going to 10 mile, it is in the staff report that they'll have to participate in fixing the capacity issues.
Are we moving anything south of town over to Orchard?
No, but what we did do when we built Orchard is we took Orchard out of 10 mile. So the old Orchard lift station used to go straight into 10 mile, and we separated those and sent that straight south to.
Okay.
So that when future Falcon Crest or East Kuna, whatever, anything that drains into that basin does not go into 10 mile.
So we're not reallocating anything south of town to Orchard at this time?
Not yet, but there is a future plan that could make that happen.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
With your permission, members of the council, and I, because of our social distancing here, I can't go over and talk to Wendy. if you're considering approving this, and because zoning is a big part of annexation, otherwise it doesn't have a zone, and the proposal here, and Wendy was absolutely correct, it is an R6. I see that in the narrative here. It was just the headings I was looking at, and then I look at the options and the motions, and I don't see the zoning in there. So if you're looking at moving forward with this, I'm sure she can supply a number that would be in there so that those actions are all taken at the same time. And I think that's the intent. And it was my fault for not reading the narrative here by asking, was this proposed to be zoned? I stand corrected there, but I do think that ought to be noted if you take action on this matter. Thank you.
Okay. Wendy, it was mentioned that there was some fourplexes or townhomes in here. I can't see anything in any of this that leads me to believe that's the case.
I will defer to the applicant on that.
Okay. Crystal, would you?
The houses aren't on the preliminary plat, but there are two attached homes that would be going in on block one, where you see those two 5,000 foot squared, square feet, blocks four and five on block one, north part of the plat, they would have attached homes. I guess you call them townhomes here. And then the other two are in block four, blocks five and six. Lots five and six. Block four, lots five and six.
What's the difference between a duplex and a townhouse in your estimation?
The way I understand it is these attached homes are divided on lot lines. So they would be separate ownerships. And I don't know what you would call a duplex here, but I believe that this is considered to be attached.
Would they have a common
single family
wall?
Dwelling?
Would they have a common wall between them?
Yes.
And they would be two different ownership?
Yes.
Usually?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Okay. Thank you. Greg, questions?
No, I don't have any at this time.
Okay.
So I guess I can start off discussion. I hear the concerns that were brought up, and I read through the letters in the packet. I think the challenging thing is, so long as the requests comply with all of the rules that we put forth in city code and the goals in the comp plan, we don't really have too much space to then say no. Excuse me. I do appreciate that there is, it sounds like, somewhat of a variety of housing types in this development. I share some of Cindy's concerns in terms of hoping that we will get some larger lot developments, but by the same token, with the housing market just continuing its seemingly meteoric rise, I've also heard a lot of people really concerned about being able to afford any type of housing in our community. So it seems like, I hope there would be interest in this subdivision, and I appreciate the variety of housing types that it sounds like we'll have in there. I don't think we have another sub that has, even a couple little duplexes in there. So it's kind of a neat feature in my mind. everything appears to comply with the comp plan, and all of the requests made by planning and zoning in terms of modifications appear to have been made. Does anybody else have thoughts, comments, concerns, anything like that?
No, I'm good.
I guess the only thing that I'm not too excited about is the look of the common lot. This looks kind of like it stretches through a whole bunch of houses and doesn't really look all that beneficial for anybody, but then I guess I can't tell exactly what that configuration is supposed to be.
Sorry, I was having trouble hearing. Are we waiting for somebody else's response, or?
Oh, we're still watching TV.
We're binge watching Netflix.
Yeah.
Okay. So, is there any further discussion or
further questions from council?
I have some, Mayor.
Okay. Richard.
If you look under 6A, page, it looks like 8 of 117.
8?
I think it's 8 of 117.
Okay.
At the very top, it says City of Kiuna Council proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. If you get down to, I think it's 3, staff findings, that property looks like the comp plan designates the northern property as medium and the southern as low density. How does that happen on one piece of property? How does it get broken up into two different densities?
There are two separate parcels there.
But they're being combined
into one development.
Plot. Okay. And that's where the medium density is coming up, is because part of it is medium.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome. Anything further? Okay.
Okay, if there's nothing else, I move we approve 1903 AN. With an R6 zoning and 1902S, as well as the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and the order of decision as presented in the packet, and that we close the public hearing.
Second.
All right. Motion is made and seconded to close the public hearing and approve the 1903AN and the 1902-S with findings of facts and conditions of approval. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
Nay.
Motion carries. Item 6B, public hearing and consideration to approve 1905-ZC rezone. Doug Hansen.
Okay. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The application for the evening is for the rezone for a property located at 763 West Avalon Road from its current classification of C2 area commercial to C1 neighborhood commercial. The proposed zoning is compliant with the comprehensive plan and the future land use map, and staff has determined this rezone application is compliant with CUNA City Code and Idaho Code. When this application went before the Planning and Zoning Commission, staff recommended the condition for the installation of streetlights at two locations, the first on the corner of West Avalon Street and South School Avenue, the second to the site's driveway access from South School Avenue. The lights should have a double head to provide lighting for both the parking lot and walking path. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended that the developer, owner, or applicant be conditioned to provide a light on the end of the building in order to satisfy the city engineer's need for a pole at the School Street entrance and to add a light pole at the corner of School and Avalon as requested by the city engineer, unless a replacement head could be found to satisfy the lighting requirements. Staff recommends the condition as initially presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission with the placement of two lights on the corner of West Avalon Street and South School Avenue, the second to the site's driveway access from South School Avenue. With that, I will answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Okay, questions for Doug? This is a very familiar old property.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have applicants that wish to present? Yeah, go ahead.
Mayor, council members, is the mic on?
Yeah.
David Crawford, BNA Engineers, 5505 West Franklin Road in Boise. I am here representing the applicant. Just wanted to bring up, we did meet with the Planning and Zoning Commission. They voted unanimous approval for the rezone and also for the design review application. We have agreed with the conditions of approval as written and as indicated through the design review committee. As you're aware, this site was the location of the old city hall, and prior to that it was also a church. So we're asking to go back to the church, and that does require a rezone due to some code changes that occurred. We believe that we've met all the, that we can meet all the conditions of approval and that the site is in conformance with the C2 request, and I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Okay, questions for Mr. Crawford? None at this time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, this is a public hearing. I have a few people that have signed up to testify. We'll start out with, in favor, Reverend Jeremy Jeans. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Good to be here. And just on behalf of the Apostolics of CUNA, the church that's going into what I guess used to be the police station and correctional, I guess where you used to bust them, we're going to try to fix them and set them free.
Good. So, if you would just state your name and address for
Jeremy
the record.
Jeremy Jeans, address 681 East Wild Lilac Court, CUNA, Idaho.
Very good. Thank you. And,
thank you for allowing us to be here. I just wanted to state our excitement at the process that's gotten us here has been a tremendous process with a lot of twists and turns, but it landed us here in CUNA, and we are totally thrilled to be here in a part of this community and put our roots down and try to be a blessing to this city and surrounding areas, particularly the young people in this coming generation. And I'm just thankful that you guys would allow us to be here. And we're excited about the future of CUNA. And I think it's looking up. And then as far as the lighting, just from our perspective, we've done a little bit of work in trying to figure it out exactly what was the problem. And we discovered that many of the lights surrounding the building, just simply the bulbs were burned out, and including the light poles, and the photo cells are bad, And so we're just kind of in the process of replacing that and getting that. And I think one reason why that corner was as dark as it appeared was just simply there was no light coming from the building itself. There is a light on the building. You got the two pole lights, as well as the other auxiliary lights that surround the building, and none of those are ever on. And as from the church's perspective, we would absolutely have no problem getting that stuff replaced and everything turned on at nighttime. And we'd be happy to do that. It, just as far as adding light poles and things of that nature, it would be a little bit of a stretch. It's a small congregation, a growing congregation. Okay. And we don't have an organization behind us, so it is a grassroots church. And just whatever could be done to help us in that, it would be a tremendous blessing. And we did notice that the light pole directly across the street from the property, where there is a light stanchion sticking out, is one of those real old style lights. And from folks that we talked to, I'm not an engineer or anything like that, but just mentioned that perhaps just replacing that bulb would make a huge difference in the lighting of that corner.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank you guys for the opportunity to be here, and we're excited about the future. Thank you all.
All right. Very good. Does anybody have any questions for? Okay.
David, did you want to testify? You didn't put an X there. Okay. So neutral, we have Cindy Giesen.
Good evening. This is Cindy Giesen at 1363 South Ash Avenue. Whenever I see an application that involves a street light, I want to be here. And so after 2 years, I finally found what light our city is approving, and I've noticed that they are no longer the dark skylights that use the 3,000 Kelvin color lights. If you look out in the horizon at the new developments, you'll see white lights out there. Those are the new ones. So I would ask for a condition added to this application that they be required to use dark sky lighting, with the main definition of lighting being a 3,000 K Kelvin color ball. It doesn't change the amount of illumination or anything else. It just is an easier nighttime light on your eyes, and it's getting missed through every subdivision that's been approved since this light was approved, because there's nothing on here that talks about the option -30 that you add when you order them that will give you the proper lighting. So I'm presently trying to get them replaced at the Desert Hawk East subdivision that glares in my eyes, and I'm hoping that this will no longer be a trend in the city, but I'm told that they might add something next year to make sure that it's dark sky. It's simple. Add the option. Add some shields around the light when it's glaring on fences and on houses. And help us. So okay. I think it needs to be, you know, specified in your approval documents, because it just keeps getting missed through so many steps, through 2 years of me following it at Desert Hawk, thinking I was going to get those dark sky lights, the amber color lights. It didn't happen. So please stop that. Thank you.
Okay. Bob, are you familiar with what those lights are?
yes, Mayor and Council. Our street lights are dark sky compliant. I met with Cindy a few times now. The American Dark Sky Association calls out the color spectrum from 3,000 to 4,000 K. Our lights are 3,500 K to 4,000 K. So our lights do meet the dark sky requirements. No disrespect, but I've gone over this time after time after time. And our lights are compliant. last time I met with Cindy, I did agree to lower in the future our lights to 3,000 and 3,500 K instead of and get rid of the 4,000 K. But the 4,000 K is a dark sky compliant light. So I guess I don't really have anything else to say.
Okay, and so is that what this one is looking at then, or is this actually?
These lights would be 3,500K, the 100-watt class because it's commercial, a parking lot light. So it is a taller pole with a 100-watt glass fixture that are dark sky compliant. That's what we're recommending, and that's what we. So anytime a subdivision comes in, during the subdivision process, they submit to us what their lights are. That they have three options to choose from. All three options are dark sky compliant. They submit those to us. We verify in a submittal, just like we do for a water valve or a sewer valve or a pressurized irrigation line. We verify during the plan review process that those lights are what we have spec'd. So this project would be no different when they bring their light package to us. We would approve it and make sure that it complies with city code and that it is quote-unquote dark sky compliant.
Okay. And the Reverend talked about a light across the street that was not functioning or was an old style, I guess, it needs probably replaced. Is that one of the ones that we own or ACHD owns and they're trying to give us? Or do you have any idea on that one? I know you don't. I didn't ask before, so.
Mayor and Council, I believe that light is an old Cobra head style that is mounted on a power pole, which would be an Idaho Power light. Those are scheduled for upgrades and replacements to LEDs, which is a conversation we'll be bringing to Council in the near future. The only thing I would ask, I would point out, and I know you're all aware of in this particular area, I know we don't make these recommendations, we don't take them lightly, but we have had a lot of safety issues right here.
Mm-hmm.
We've had people hit. We've had kids nearly hit. But that was where our recommendation for the lights came from, and it was my recommendation that the city engineer included in his memo. So that's where our recommendation came from. We know it's hard to do, and we're sympathetic to that, and we would stand by whatever the council decides to do, but just wanted to point out that that's where our recommendation to add lighting came from, is just overall safety of the public.
So is Idaho Power changing some of those lights out? The reason I ask is right in front of my house, across the road is a subdivision, and those lights are, they're probably owned by the city. They're a different style. They're a light pole. The one across the road at right in front of my home is actually on a power pole. They changed that head out the other day, and I believe it was an Idaho Power truck that did that. It's a very nice, bright light that shines on the street and the sidewalk, but I have never had my yard dark before. And in this case, when they change that light, now my yard is dark, which is good. That means it's not shining in my house, right? But the light out on the street is actually quite bright, and safety-wise is a good thing. So I'm just curious if you know anything about those lights, or if Idaho Power is changing some of them out, or if that's something that we had requested.
Yeah, that's just part of their upgrade. They're going around and replacing all their fixtures to LED fixtures. There's some pretty cool technology out there. It evolves monthly on changing the footprint of light pattern. You can change it anywhere from at the top to straight down to 30 degrees by the time you hit the ground and control the light pollution. We're also looking at adding some shields and that we discussed with Cindy before to shield a little bit of light, change the direction of it. But yes, that is Idaho Power They've done that in a few other spots too. They got a LED kind of a drive, if you will, going to get everything switched to LED and hand over to the cities.
They also cleaned the vine off that power pole, which was very nice of them too. So, all right. Any further questions from council? I didn't have anyone else signed up to testify. Was there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign in who wishes to? Okay. Yes. Mr. Crawford, thank you.
All right. Mayor, council members, I'm going to dive down in the weeds a little bit. And I don't really want to. Tonight, what's here before you is a rezone request. The Design Review Committee, we committed to work with the city engineer to improve the lighting in the area to the satisfaction of the city engineer. One thing we were trying to avoid, there was some discussion through the Planning and Zoning Commission of whose responsibility lighting the intersection was, and was the safety issue, should that be something the city of CUNA took care of because of the lighting conditions that are already there. We have two lights within about 60, 70 feet of each other, and we can't get the intersection lit. And so the original condition was, let's put in another pole. So what we ultimately came up with is our clients agreed to do what they could to work with the city engineer to come up with an appropriate light in the area that would satisfy the condition as written. We definitely agree with that. It allows some flexibility. I learned more about lights tonight than I ever want to know about lights. So it's hard for me to say, oh, yeah, we can just do this or that or the other. Which
you need to have lunch with Cindy one day.
Right. Again, I don't want to know any more about lights than that. My response would be, I'll just go to Alloway and have them pick me out a light.
But, there you go.
You know, that's kind of why the condition was written as such. And we fully intend to comply with that condition and do what we can. But tonight, what's before the council is a rezone request, and we respectfully request approval for that tonight.
Okay. All right. Is there any further questions from council? And we appreciate you working with our city engineer on the lighting and doing what you can. I think we actually have I never did hear exactly how it turned out, but we did have a young lady that was hit at that intersection, and that was just going through court recently. So we appreciate any help there. And the question is rightfully before council, if there is no more questions.
Okay. It looks like... the request is in compliance with code and the comp plan and everything. And it sounds like we're working as much as we can with dialing down the light number, if you will, while still trying to appreciate the need for more safety type lighting in that area. So I move we approve 1905ZC with the conditions of approval as listed and the finding of facts, conclusions of law, and order of decision as presented in the packet, and that we move the public hearing.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve 1905ZC, the rezone, and the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order of decision as presented in the packet, and to close the public hearing. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? And that motion carries. Thank you very much. Item 7, the consideration to approve resolution number... We're going to chase you out of City Hall with that can of spray. Interestingly enough, even before all of this
coronavirus and that, if anyone coughed or sneezed or looked like they had a cold in City Hall, we had at least two people in City Hall would chase you around with those things. So we've been preparing for a long time. All right. Thank you, Mr. Crawford. All right. Consideration to approve resolution number R24-2020. Resolution of the City Council of the City of Cuna, Idaho, pursuant to Idaho Code and 46-10111, consenting to the extension of Mayor Joe Steer's declaration of emergency dated March 17th, 2020, concerning the novel coronavirus known as COVID-19. And so that declaration was made today in an attempt to give us some more ability to collect with whatever resources and fundings may become available through federal and state resources for this coronavirus and help to get us ahead of the curve. And along with that, we have also, this will actually be the last public meeting that we have in City Hall for a couple of weeks. We're going to close the public, the city-owned public buildings to the public. We will continue to operate. Employees will come and work the desks, and those that have extreme vulnerability, we'll do our best to set them up so that they can work from home remotely, but for the most part, employees will come back down here to work, and we'll answer the phones and emails and everything as we normally would on a daily basis with the doors locked for a couple of weeks. So we're following, I've looked at a lot of recommendations over the past few days and read a lot. Actually, the one that made the very most sense was from our dear President Donald Trump, and basically it's a 15-day plan to help reduce the risks of the virus. It's basically, it's a common sense thing. If you're sick, stay home. If your kids are sick, keep them home. If you've been tested and you do have the virus, keep all of your family home. I think what we ask with that is they are actually lifting some of the restrictions on the HIPAA requirements so that healthcare providers can do a little better job of taking phone calls and meeting with some of the patients over the phone that way. So a lot of that's going to be handled that way without actually having to expose the public to sickness. They can monitor people from home that way. And hopefully for a couple of 3 weeks we can do this, and the sooner we get it started, the sooner we can be over this, we hope. So we will continue to conduct business, but basically the declaration that I made needs to be confirmed by City Council that you're okay with that happening. And
I move we approve resolution number
R24-2020.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R24-2020. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? That motion carries. Fair Housing Month proclamation. Oh, now I've got to find it. I didn't get documents loaded on my new laptop, so it takes me a minute to find stuff. I have to get this all figured out one of these days soon. It won't be long now.
Aha, there it is. All right. Whereas April 2020 marks the 52nd anniversary of the passage of Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act of 1968, commonly known as the Federal Fair Housing Act, and whereas the Idaho Human Rights Commission Act has prohibited discrimination in housing since 1969, and whereas equal opportunity for the regardless of race, color, religion, sex, disability, familial status, or national origin is a fundamental goal of our nation, state, and city, and whereas equal access to housing is an important component of this goal, as fundamental as the right to an equal education and employment, and whereas housing is a critical component of family and community health and stability, and whereas housing choice impacts on our children's access to education, our ability to seek and retain employment options and cultural benefits we enjoy, the extent of our exposure to crime, drugs, and the quality of health care we receive in emergencies, and whereas the laws of this nation and our state seek to ensure such equality of choice for all transactions involving housing, and whereas ongoing education, outreach, and monitoring are key to raising awareness of fair housing principles, practices, rights, and responsibilities, and whereas only through continued cooperation, commitment, and support of all Idahoans can barriers to fair housing be removed. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Joe Steer, Mayor of the City of Cuna, Idaho, do here proclaim April 2020 Fair Housing Month in the City of Cuna, Ada County, State of Idaho. Item 7B, consideration to approve resolution number R23-2020. Lisa Holland was going to present this, but I will do so. So this is to confirm setting up the economic development, the Urban Renewal Committee. So this is a resolution of the City Council of Cuna, Idaho, providing recitals and findings and providing for 5 board member commissioner seats to the Cuna Urban Renewal Agency and setting the terms of office and appointing commissioners to each seat and directing the city clerk and providing an effective date. So we had met with these folks and they have agreed to take on this task, and they're gonna set this, help get this set up and find us in a good direction on this Urban Renewal Agency. So the people that have been selected to be here were, well, Greg McPherson. He will represent the City Council on the Urban Renewal Agency Board. He has experience serving as a fire commissioner, Cuna resident, City Council member, and is well-connected in understanding agriculture to our community. Todd Cooper. Todd has worked most of his professional career in banking, but also has a strong understanding of economic development. He has contributed hundreds of hours to community organizations and also served as a chairman for the Boise Valley Economic Partnership for 2 years, as well as a board member, treasurer, for many more. Todd also worked for Boise State University as the economic development director and just recently has returned back to banking. Todd participated in the economic development strategic planning workshop last fall, and his diverse perspectives will be invaluable to the commission. Rocco D'Orazio. Rocco is a local Cuna resident, entrepreneur, and developer. He has worked on numerous projects and has a broad background in marketing as well. He really cares about how Cuna develops and understands how the development process works. Winston Anoyu. Winston currently works for McIlvain Construction, but comes with a broad skill set in understanding industrial projects, rail, and infrastructure planning. He has public policy experience and a depth of knowledge in the working with municipalities, government organizations, and companies. And finally, Taylor Tibbetts. Taylor is an experienced real estate attorney and commercial title and escrow professional.
He founded Empire Titles Commercial Real Estate Group in the Treasure Valley in 2015. After a stint operating his own law firm practicing real estate law across the state of Idaho, Taylor returned as general counsel and commercial department manager in Empire in 2019. He's worked on a wide variety of real estate transactions and has been legal counsel to buyers, sellers, real estate agents, property management companies, investors, developers, and lenders. He also is a local CUNA resident. Those are the five people that we have asked to be on this committee and or on this on this committee, the agency board, so we would appreciate your confirming those members to the committee. Yes, Bill.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Lisa has worked with me on this, and we came up with the draft of that resolution and the certificates that will be issued, and it follows the urban renewal law.
Okay, thank
Mayor.
You.
Mayor.
Yes.
How come none of the terms have been staggered on this?
Oh, didn't we get that done? I thought we did that.
They are in the resolution.
Yeah, they are in the resolution.
They're staggered? Looks like they're all...
Yeah, they're all sufficient, yeah.
Because if you... I'm sorry.
There's
two. So it's on...
No more than two have the same term.
Yeah, so it's Todd Cooper, seat number one... 3 years.
Yeah. It has the expiration and each of their identifying descriptions on page two. One and two. 1.4 is the section.
Oh, I see. January 22, 23, and the next one would be 24 and the 24.
Yeah.
That was a little confusing for me to read, too, but it's all, they do stagger.
Yeah, they're staggered. They end differently, and then they'll be on the same, the length of their term will be the same thereafter, but they don't come up at the same time.
Right.
Okay.
All right, anything further on that?
So I have no issues with these folks, and I'm happy to make a motion to approve the resolution. But I'll just add my commentary that as terms come up, I really hope that we consider having women be members of this too, because I think it's important to have a variety of perspectives.
Yes, and I would agree with that. We did actually have a couple of other people that we had asked. However, they had determined that they were busy at the moment, so their timing in life was not correct for them to hop on this committee and do us a good job. So we certainly will keep that in mind, though, as we move forward.
Does anybody else have comments or
any other ready? Comments? Ready for a motion?
Ready for motion.
Okay. I move we approve resolution number R23-2020.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution R23-2020. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Mayor Council announcements. Is there anybody that has anything? I've kind of gone over what I wanted to talk about operations here for a little while. We'll work with what we're doing with Bob and his position when we get to that point, and I'll send out a memo so that Council knows what I'm looking at there. And
I told him we just denied his request for resignation.
I let him know he's needed at least through August.
I have two items, well, related items to bring up.
Sure.
I've seen several
comments on social media today with the reminders that today's water shutoff day. I've seen several folks suggesting that we should suspend water shutoff because of the pandemic. So I just wanted to, I guess, throw that out there for a discussion item. As a related issue, I've seen several places people also suggesting that our rate changes should be delayed at least several months or indefinitely until the pandemic resolves. So I just wanted to throw that out there for any, I guess, comment or discussion.
So we, on the, as far as the shutoffs go, it's not the kind of thing we normally advertise, but we determined that we would not do that this round. And actually, we would accept partial payments from people that normally would, that we wouldn't do that normally from, so that we can keep their water moving and keep providing that service. Also keeps our people from being out in the public. The water rate changes, I think we've kind of determined, and I don't know, I guess council can chime in there, but I think we've kind of determined that those are most likely not going to be that dramatic for people, and so I don't know that postponing that would be a wise idea. So obviously, if we wish to do something about that, we'll have to put that on a future agenda and talk about it later, but certainly we can keep that in mind with council if there's an interest in doing something differently there. So, Jared, do you know exactly when, I forget now exactly when we start the new billing?
Jared, MP City Treasurer. So we were supposed to implement the new rate changes of April 1st. And so.
Coming right up.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So, I don't think it's going to be that dramatic for most people. So I think we're probably okay there, unless there's something that council wishes we look into further from there. But we certainly didn't. It was actually Jared and staff had made the determination earlier not to go out and start shutting off people's water and things like that. So I don't know. Where are we at with shutoffs? Do you know, as far as numbers go, they're greatly reduced from what they used to be. So
yeah, so the number that I was given this morning was that we had about 90 folks on shutoff. Generally, we have about the past few months, we've had about 70. And so, I mean, today we probably had 35 who either made a partial payment or full payment. So we'll proceed from there and kind of take it on a case-by-case basis as to exactly how we treat each individual case. So,
okay. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. All of that sounds reasonable. Thanks for entertaining that.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Bob.
I just want to give a quick update on downtown phase two. I went to the pre-con meeting yesterday. It's scheduled to start April 20th and run through July 25th. They will probably be mobilizing the week before the 20th, but construction starting Monday the 20th. Right now, we're basically taking the remainder of the time we have till then to get with business owners, let them know what's going on. I mean, not that we haven't talked to them many times, but let them know that we're starting construction, addressing any of their concerns, and we're moving forward. Should start construction here soon.
Bill, did you have something?
I just had a question, and I think you may know more about this than I do, but at 409, House Bill is dead. And then I see that we had 468 and 469, which was designed to provide some property tax relief to persons over 65, and it went with their homeowner's exemption. But it looks like those went to Ways and Means, which usually means it's going nowhere. Do you know what's afoot over there?
So I haven't really heard anything too much. The property tax freeze bill that kind of turned into the Senate's version then of the availability for a 4% increase and nothing else, that failed. They just dropped it. It's out. So that's off the table this year. So we shouldn't have any problems with that. There was a bill that raised the homeowner's exemption from $100,000 to $112,000. I don't know exactly the parameters of what lets you get the $112,000, if that's across the board or if there were some other requirements for that to happen. That one, I believe, is still on the table. I haven't heard anything differently on that anyway, but it looked like for the most part, the other one that was, we don't have an urban renewal agency as of yet, but the only other one that was still floating out there was the taking the funding that normally would go to highway districts out of that mix. And then I don't know that that was a huge thing, because then it still allows the urban renewal agency to negotiate with the highway districts for those funds for whatever tax increment that is. But it doesn't look like we're going to get hit too hard by any of the legislation that's going through, as near as I can tell. But I don't think I'm missing any pieces right now. But it looked like this week was they all want to get out of there because of the coronavirus now. So I think they're all ready to go home, and hopefully they'll get out of the mischief. So. We're hoping. Union negotiations, I think that, yeah, that one dropped off the charts. So I don't think there was a lot of stuff that was too effective for us at this point. That's good. Thank you for bringing that up. I meant to mention the property tax freeze was off the table this year, so that's a good thing.
And I think there's hostility now between the House and the Senate over that whole thing. So I'm sure this will be back next year.
There is. What we had asked from the Association of Idaho Cities was to meet with legislators and see if we could put together a committee to talk about this and see what we can do for some kind of property tax relief. Mr. Moyle had agreed to that, and then, like, the next day went ahead and introduced his legislation. Completely ignoring what he said the day before. So he wanted a total tax freeze. When it went to the Senate, and the Senate decided to change it, he didn't like the fact that they changed his bill. They didn't want him touching his bill. So I don't know who got mad at who, but there were some closed-door discussions that didn't sound like they were very nice in manner. But anyway, it got it dropped off the charts for this year. So anyway, we're all concerned with property tax relief and seeing what we can do to help with people with that, because that is a problem. It's something that needs addressed, so we certainly want to get that fixed. But just randomly making things up to help fix a bill doesn't help anybody. So anyway.
Here.
Yes.
It might be good to have Chief John kind of give a synopsis of what CUNA police are going to do or have done or will be doing for the record.
Yeah, Chief.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council.
You turn the mic on.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, John McDaniel, CUNA Police Chief. So in,
did you spray yourself before?
Yeah, afterwards, it's a full shower. We have been in communication, obviously, with our main office, and the sheriff today did a press conference with the other electeds from the county level. And so we are, just today, I sent our continuity of operations plan, an updated one, from this month to the mayor and to Barrister. We are also looking at contingency plans as far as potentially staffing, our force if we lose 10, 20, 30% to sickness or more. And so We're working with other departments, other cities, to kind of go to more of a metro look, if that's what it takes, to police. So we're gonna use all of our partners, if that's what it takes, to make sure we can answer, you know, all the calls for service. Another thing we're doing is some of our lower priority calls, we are taking those by phone call. And there are times we'll have citizens, you know, step out of the house if there's any kind of concern. As long as they're ambulatory, we'll have them step out and talk to us in the open air rather than going into their house. So we're taking things a little bit slower if time's on our side, which a lot of the time it is. And just being smart, we did outfit all of our troops with the N95 mask. And sometimes it probably is best procedure to put that on the potential person that has the sickness, and sometimes it'd probably be better to put it on us depending on the circumstance, but we're just trying to be as smart as we can and following the guidelines that the president put out as well.
Are you wanting to be deputized?
I bet he does.
Only if I get one of those bright yellow shirts, and I get to wear shorts on my bicycle. So
no.
So does the patrol have hand sanitizers and whatnot that they can use in public?
Yes.
Since they are dealing every day with the public?
Absolutely, yes. We keep we have the bigger bottles kind of right in our doors where we can spray each time we make a contact or grab a driver's license or whatever, and so we're really encouraging that. And
Nancy made these today.
Made those?
She did. She took a really big jug and probably has carpal tunnel now from pumping into these little bottles. But
I remember the old days when she gave out cookies.
I know, and then we didn't have a meeting, so they sat here.
I would think the city jail would be a major problem if it breaks out down there. What do you do with the prisoners then?
Yeah,
just isolate them in the prison.
Yeah, that's one of our that's more serious side of our contingency plans. And 10 years ago, when I was a lieutenant working in the jail, we went through our coop plans for that type of a. I think we'd have to triage and get some potentially down to the fairgrounds, or we have a few other places that we would. We'd have to separate the sick from the non-sick, and already we are asking our other police agencies in the county to really use good discretion and, you know, use the citation into court when we can, as long as it's not a crime of violence. And the jail is definitely doing a heightened job of screening as people come in, everything from temperatures to. And so we're trying to catch it on that side before, you know, it can get in.
Since you're on contract to the city, mm-hmm. The contract imposes certain conditions. How many officers are on duty at any one time? Are you going to have a shortage, you think, in the future with having to stay home?
We do not at all, you know, and I think we'll know more in the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 days, you know, which way the curve goes on this. And I think that's where the contingency plans come into place. And,
okay.
And you know, we have the ability to, one thing with the schools shut down, we can pull school resources officers onto patrol. And so we have some other areas that if we have to, some of the detective caseload can be, you know, patrol has to come first. We have to be able to answer those 911 calls, and so that will absolutely be a priority.
Okay.
And then I don't know any of the circumstances behind it, but apparently Commissioner Rick Visser had turned in a resignation. So we have two county commissioners at this point in time. I don't know what. I haven't seen it or read it or any of that. I hadn't heard from him, so. I guess he turned in a letter of resignation, and that's all I know about that. So
that's interesting.
Yes, Bill.
Yeah, just an adjunct with regards to personnel and the police. I know with Eagle, Chief Rusty Kofelt said their protocol with firefighters would be if a firefighter has a contact with someone who's then found to have the coronavirus, then they have to be quarantined for 2 weeks, either in home, and if there are people at home at risk, then they have to find some other place to stay, and then if they have any symptoms in that two-week period, then they have to go get tested, it's my understanding. And I guess they're trying to work on quick tests, and then there's some others that take up to 7 days. So, and then there's a difference on whether they come into contact with the person that had coronavirus either on their own or in the line of duty, and there get to be issues associated with that. But, yeah, this is a new territory.
Definitely is. Okay. Anything further?
Thank you, John.
Thanks, Chief. All right. Well, with that. With the chief spraying down the podium, I think we are adjourned.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you all. Safe.